Word on Health, the report with its finger on the pulse of popular medicine with Paul Pennington. Word on Health, for your very best of health. PANS stands for Pediatric Acute Onset Neuropsychiatric Syndrome, and PANDAS stands for Pediatric Autoimmune Neuropsychiatric Disorders Associated with Streptococcal Infections. Awareness of both is incredibly low. PANS and PANDAS are conditions that often appear suddenly and affect the physical and mental health of children and young adults. Overnight, children can go from being healthy and well-adjusted to being desperately ill, a situation all too familiar to Vicky Burford, Chair of Trustees and co-founder of the charity PANS PANDAS UK.
My son became ill back in 2016. He was the age of 12, and overnight he actually developed this range of what looked like psychiatric symptoms. And over the course of a week, he became really very sick to the point where he was admitted to hospital. Very quickly, though, it became apparent that the doctors just did not know what to do with him. They ruled out psychiatric illness, but they couldn't understand what was actually wrong. So they effectively just washed their hands of us and sent us home. And they basically said there was nothing that they could do. Google became my friend. I literally spent every spare moment I had trying to find out what was causing my perfectly fine son, 12 years old. He was living his best life. He had friends. He was excelling at school. He was happy and funny and everything was great. And all of a sudden that changed. And eventually I found this very peculiar condition called PANS. And I just thought, doesn't even sound like a real thing. But every single box was ticked. It was like a light bulb moment. So I went to my doctor and I said, I think I know what it is. It's this. And they kind of laughed at me and said, oh, it's not a real diagnosis. That's not real. That doesn't exist. They eventually said to me that he had autism. That's what's causing all of these symptoms. And I thought, maybe he does have autism, but he didn't have all of these symptoms before. So why has he suddenly got them now? And nobody wanted to look at a PANS diagnosis. And so with some other parents that had met on a Facebook support group, we decided that we would set up a charity and try and make a change so that doctors could understand the conditions and would recognize them. And it was 2 years after my son became ill that we got a diagnosis from an NHS doctor who treated him. And within a few days, my son's symptoms disappeared.
Vicky, what did you understand PANS to be?
It was a misdirected immune response to an infection. He had this kind of flu bug, but he couldn't leave the room. He was very sensitive to the light and the heat, and he was really not very well. So we took him to the doctor, who gave him two antibiotics and a nasal spray to try and hit the infection hard. The antibiotics definitely helped. But it was a couple of days after we got home that he came into my room and he said, I can hear voices talking to me. And I just thought, this is crazy. What are you talking about? And tried to remain very calm, as you do as a parent. Underneath, I'm panicking, but I was like, I'm sure it's fine. We'll take you to the doctor tomorrow. And that's where it started, really. It just kicked off from there.
How typical were your son's symptoms compared to other people's?
Do you know what? That's a really, really good question, Paul, because I've come to realize that's part of the reason why it's so difficult to diagnose. Because what we understand, and there's a lot that we don't understand about PANS, it's important to say that. There's very little research, really. But what we understand is that whatever the mechanism is, it causes some kind of inflammation in a very specific part of the brain, the basal ganglia. And that part of the brain is responsible for cognition and emotion and movement. It depends on which part of that basal ganglia is inflamed that result in certain symptoms. You could have 20 children with PANS and they would all look different with their symptoms. The typical symptoms that we see in these children is either OCD type symptoms, so compulsions and obsessions. We would see tics, and they would be vocal tics or they could be motor tics. And then there's severe eating restrictions where a child will not take liquids or foods. And it might happen gradually, but it can become very, very severe where children will not eat.
How does PANS differ from PANDAS?
PANS is the overarching diagnosis, and then PANDAS sits underneath it. And the reason it's got its own definition is because we know that PANDAS is caused by a strep infection, whereas PANS can be caused by any infection.
I understand it's unclear as to whether there are risk factors. Estimates as to how many people are affected by PANS and PANDAS differ greatly, and I know you've conducted research that shows the vast majority of GPs have never heard of either. But I understand things are changing.
We are now working with a range of Royal Colleges. We have regular meetings with NHS Directors of Children and Young People. And we also have an APPG. Recently, Maria Caulfield, the Health Minister, made it clear that PANS and PANDAS are distinct disease entities. There is now enough evidence to explain that. And yeah, there's a huge amount of work being done to raise awareness amongst medical professionals.
Does this just affect young people?
No. According to the diagnostic criteria, PANDAS only occurs in children, and generally the symptoms will come on pre-puberty. For PANS, there is no age definition, so anybody can get PANS. As awareness rises, we're seeing more and more adults coming to us for support with adult onset symptoms. There's always been adults who have had symptoms since childhood and then have just taken them into adulthood with them.
And where are things at in terms of curing or treating PANS and PANDAS?
I can testify that my son is cured. He has not been sick. He's now 20. He first became ill when he was 12. By 16, he was well. But there are doctors and clinicians who will say you can manage the conditions, but you can't cure them. Nobody's really, really completely sure. And it's true, there are many children who are still struggling. There is no one-size-fits-all treatment.
My grateful thanks to Vicky Burford. To find out more about PANS and PANDAS and to connect through to the charity, visit our website, wordonhealth.com. That's wordonhealth.com.
Word on Health, for your very best of health.
Endometriosis is a long-term condition where tissue similar to the lining of the womb grows in other places, such as the ovaries and fallopian tubes. It impacts the physical and mental health of 1 in 10 women and those assigned female at birth in the UK, from puberty to menopause, although the impact may be felt for life. Getting a diagnosis for endometriosis is now taking even longer, according to new research by the charity Endometriosis UK. Their CEO is Emma Cox.
The average time for diagnosis in the UK is now 8 years and 10 months. Left untreated, the disease may grow and progress. And so that means that if people aren't diagnosed, they're not getting treatment. And also, if you're having to take some time off school or some time off work, and you don't have a name for what that is, and people are telling you, well, you should just be fine, it's normal, you'll get sanctioned at school, you won't have a reason for missing work, you can have work repercussions. So it can have a real impact on your entire life, if you like. So if you've not been able to attend school, you don't attain the level of education you'd like, you maybe can't do as well as a university or college, you can't get the job you want, you can't hold down the job you want, all because nobody's recognised what you've got is actually a medical condition and given you help.
Where do the challenges lie?
It was always too long before the pandemic, and same reasons in terms of pelvic pain not being taken seriously, a lot of normalisation of severe pain. So while some people have painful periods, if it's pain that's interfering with day-to-day life, then it could be something underlying like endometriosis. But when people seek help, they're just told it's normal. And also symptoms not being recognised. So endometriosis can cause symptoms that aren't just period related. They could be painful bowel movements, painful weeing, painful sex. And so those things aren't linked together. I think there's quite a lot of taboos in there. People just don't like talking about those things. So there's also people not realising that they need to seek help.
Your new report, which is based on a survey of 5,208 people with endometriosis, contains several recommendations which would help reduce diagnosis times. Talk me through them.
They're all doable. At government level and at the NHSs across the UK, it's facing up to what the volume is and dealing with that. There's just not being given enough scheduled time or operating theatre time to do the treatments needed. We're hearing anecdotally from hospitals that they have less gynaecological operating theatre time post-COVID than they did pre-COVID. And whilst people might be thinking, well, hold on, that means more resources, I would argue that if we do this, we'd save a lot of NHS resources in multiple GP appointments, multiple hospital appointments, multiple visits to A&E, because people are going and using those and they're not getting the treatment they need. It's good to see that the Scottish and the English governments have published women's health plans or strategies where they're prioritising endometriosis, and also Wales are looking at that too, and all menstrual health conditions. But the thing is, it's great having it on paper. We need to see that put into practice and implemented.
My grateful thanks to Emma Cox. To find out more and to link through to Endometriosis UK, visit our website, wordonhealth.com. That's wordonhealth.com.
Word on Health, your personal prescription for your very best of health.
With a general election looming where the state of the NHS will be a much discussed issue, the Patients Association have launched their own manifesto to ensure patient voice isn't lost. Rachel Power is CEO of the Patient Association.
You know, if you really start with the patient and start working out what matters to them and what's important to them and make that a default in all operating systems, we know that shared decision making and patient partnership working well within the system will reduce inequalities of health.
Talk me through the key points of your manifesto.
We do need to reverse the normalisation of the crisis within health and care, commit to funding and developing existing pandemic recovery plans in full. There's 2.6 million people out of work because of ill health, and over a million of those are saying that the delays are affecting their ability to work. So the first thing that we asked for in our manifesto is about the NHS constitution. We're not achieving what we promised in that constitution. It was set as a benchmark for patient involvement in healthcare services. So we're asking to urgently review and update the constitution, including the information around patient choice. Our last report, patients weren't aware that they did have a choice of location or where they could go and have their treatment. We have to stop hearing about bad and poor communication. Patients telling us about chasing referrals, information not being shared between systems, not respecting communication needs. It's a huge frustration. Give patients ownership and access to all their medical information. And how do we work with the complaint system within the NHS? We need a much more transparent system. And we also need a system that we know that we're learning from. We need properly resourced social care so that patients can get the support that they need in the community, ensuring that marginalised communities can access services central to the objectives of the strategy, and help particularly those people with more complex healthcare conditions. Patients can't receive the care they need in an understaffed and under-resourced system. Whilst we welcomed the NHS workforce plan, the next government need to go beyond that as new needs or gaps emerge. There must be a commitment to revise the projections as the needs of patients change. And introducing legislation on safe staffing would be an important step in protecting patients from unsafe care and preventing avoidable harm. And inequalities are happening before people reach the NHS. We need a cross-government strategy that sets out what different departments can do to promote health and well-being, because a healthy nation is a healthy economy as well.
And if politicians embrace your manifesto, what do you think it could achieve?
Everything we have in there is important to ensure the future of health and care within the United Kingdom, and will have society able to get on with what matters to them in their lives.
My grateful thanks to Rachel Power. To find out more and to connect through to the Patients Association, visit our website, wordonhealth.com. That's wordonhealth.com.
Keeping you in touch with the health and lifestyle issues that matter. This is Word on Health with Paul Pennington.